Hello, I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to The Hour of the Time, brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Well, some of you may know this already, but WWCR, the station that The Hour of the Time is normally broadcast over, was burned to the ground at about 2 a.m. Central Standard Time, Sunday morning, April 4th. There were only two people in the station at the time of the fire, a female employee and a local minister who was broadcasting a show from the station at that time. Now, arson is suspected, strongly suspected, I might add, simply because of several curious coincidences, if you can call them that. We don't believe that they are coincidences. Number one, the building went up in a conflagration. In other words, there weren't any smoking wires. There was no smell of smoke anywhere. It didn't sputter and spud. It didn't start in a corner and slowly burn through the building. The whole building went up in a conflagration, which is extremely unusual unless fires are set in several places. Also, the sprinkler system, which is gravity-fed from a very large holding tank, did not activate. I repeat, the sprinkler system did not activate. Also, something else happened that is more than just curious. Several of the local television stations had reporters with TV cameras on the scene before the fire department ever arrived, which seems to indicate that they were tipped off or had some prior knowledge that the fire was either in progress or was going to be set. No one will admit or acknowledge their prior knowledge. No one will tell us how they knew that the building was on fire in order for them to arrive before the fire department. But be that as it may, this show, because of that fire, was no longer able to broadcast worldwide as it had been doing for some time. And we have lost a lot of our listening audience out there. So if those of you who are listening can spread the word and let those who cannot listen know what is happening, that will give them some peace of mind. Now, I'm not a radio person, and you all know that. This is a tool that helps me educate the people of the world into what's coming in the future if we don't all wake up and become responsible and change it for the better. But our sponsor, Swiss America Trading, didn't want to lose their sponsorship of this show. Now, they care about what this show does. They care about the information that's being put out on this show. They believe in what I am doing. They believe in the hour of the time. When our friends at Swiss America Trading heard about the fire, they didn't desert us, as most sponsors would, and go looking for somebody else on some other radio show to sponsor. They went right to work finding us another place to broadcast. And within a matter of hours, folks, a new station was found, the one that you're listening to now, WRNO 7.395, thus making it possible for this program to continue to get the truth out to the people of the world. The people at Swiss America Trading stand behind this program, and I want you to stand behind them. Swiss America Trading deals in protecting their clients through non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets. Now, you've heard me inform you about the trouble this country is in, both politically and financially, and the time to act is now. Not later, when it's too late. Not later, when you can look in the mirror and say, boy, was I dumb for not taking care of business when I had a chance. The time to act is now. Call the experts at Swiss America Trading at 1-800-289-2646 right now. 1-800-289-2646. And have them show you how to protect yourself instead of relying upon someone else to do it for you. Because I guarantee you, if that's what you're doing, you're going to find yourself in deep, deep trouble. Call 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. And mention my name, William Cooper, for a free newsletter on protecting your future. By protecting your future, you're keeping the future of this program alive and hopefully freedom for the world. Call today, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. And I'll repeat this information later in the program, folks. And when you call, give them your thanks for what they've done to keep this show on the air. Tonight's program is important, and I hope you have pen and paper by your side, because what I'm going to impart to you, I've said many, many, many times before, but I know there are many, many new listeners out there who have never heard this and don't know what's going on. And I know that those who have heard it before need constant reinforcement, because we tend to only remember about 10% of what we ever hear or see. Now, you've heard it from me. Tonight you're going to hear it from a different source through me. You see, I received a letter not too long ago from one of our CAGI members. This letter is dated March 8, 1993. And it says, Dear Mr. Cooper, enclosed are the passport photos, personnel information sheet, press cards, and CAGI agreement form in accordance with your instructions. Also enclosed is a copy of a newspaper article that I was able to get several newspapers to run. Included are some 30 pages of copied material to substantiate the information in the article. You see, our CAGI members, folks, are real heroes in my eyes. They're out there constantly digging and working to dig up facts, figures, and references and documentation that we use to bring you the truth of what's happening in the world, the truth that you're never shown on network TV, that you're never shown in the establishment television, that you never hear on establishment radio or in the print media. But you hear it on the hour of the time. And you might ask yourself, and you might ask your local media, your television stations, radio, why it is that you only hear it on the hour of the time. Now, this person, and I'm not going to give out his name, I never give out CAGI members' names unless they give me permission to do so. He says, somehow we have got to get the people to understand that the federal debt does not exist. I've told you that before. The reason I'm going to give it to you from his point of view is because he's substantiated what I've told you before in his own investigations. And you've all heard me say this over and over again. Never believe anything that you hear on this show or on any other show from Dan Rather, from Chuck Carter, Tom Valentine, or Rush Limbaugh, from Ted Koppel, from the President of the United States, or even from your own mother, unless you can substantiate it with solid proof in your own research. If you're not willing to do the research, shut off your radio. You're wasting my time. He goes on, these private bankers have never loaned any existing money to the government. They have created it out of thin air. Perhaps this realization, once it soaks into the consciousness of enough Americans, can lead to the level of active participation needed to restore morality and sanity to our government. Although I had taught economics and I better not give that out because it might tend to identify him. Although I had taught economics for several years and was certainly aware of the money-creating role of the Federal Reserve, I didn't really understand the truth and consequences of the conspiracy until 1988. I resigned effective December 1988 and have spent all of my time since researching the truth regarding the monetary hoax perpetrated on the citizens of the United States. When one first begins to grasp the magnitude of the hoax, denial sets in. And I know that many of you out there listening are already doing that. He goes on, after all, how could the leaders of the United States have been taken in by such a ploy? Well, some out of ignorance and some out of greed. The reality, folks, is that a relatively small group of malevolent individuals have taken control of all gold and silver reserves of the United States and most other tangible wealth and left the citizens holding worthless pieces of paper or tokens worth less than 3% of their face value. The information contained in these enclosures is true and is sufficient to allow one to realize the following. Number one, the Federal Reserve creates money out of thin air to buy government bonds from the United States Treasury. They have never actually loaned any existing funds to the government. This being true, it is obvious that the citizens of the United States do not owe the owners of the Federal Reserve System. Rather, the owners of the Federal Reserve owe the citizens of the United States not only the unearned interest they have received since 1913, but also must return to the U.S. Treasury all of the gold and silver they have taken. The only portion of the national debt that is valid is for those government bonds purchased by individuals and organizations that do not have money-creating authority. Two, the Federal Reserve System is unconstitutional, and so is the fiat money issued by the system. Three, majority stock of the Federal Reserve System is owned by foreign interest, and this has always been so. The United States government owns zero stock in the system. Four, although the creation of the Federal Reserve System was supposed to stabilize money supply and prevent further panics, this has not been the case. The U.S. economy has experienced not only the Great Depression, but several other major recessions, including this one, folks, that destroyed many businesses and property owners, all caused by intended contractions of the money supply. At other times, the Federal Reserve's greatly expanded money supply to purposely increase inflation, thus transferring wealth from the citizens to themselves. As an example, between 1964 and 1988, real gross national product increased 102%, while money supply increased 388%. And any increase of money supply over gross national product growth is pure inflation. Five, the huge sums of unearned interest the owners of the Federal Reserve System have received has been used to subjugate millions of peoples around the world under corrupt dictatorships, most of them communist. Six, the Federal Reserve System has actually taken ownership and possession of all the gold and silver formerly owned by the United States Treasury. Seven, since the existing money supply system uses only instruments of debt, and only the Federal Reserve System issues those instruments, it is literally impossible for the United States to pay off its imaginary debt. For example, as of March 1992, total deposits in all United States banks was $2.546 trillion, and total currency in circulation was $0.284 trillion, for a total deposits in currency of $2.830 trillion. The total imaginary federal debt as of fiscal year 91 was $3.502 trillion. The absurdity of the situation is readily apparent. There isn't enough money available to pay off the imaginary federal debt. And since the only way to obtain more money is to borrow it, obviously the government can never pay its imaginary debt under the existing system. If we add the $796 billion of consumer debt and the $346 billion state debt to the imaginary federal debt, one can see that the system is near collapse and will collapse soon unless the government restores a lawful and sane monetary system. It is indeed a pitiful sight to see United States congressmen, monetary officials, economists, and spokesmen for the president continue the deception that has almost destroyed the United States of America. To see these officials talk about tax increases and cutbacks in government programs for citizens in need of assistance, using the excuse of the federal debt, is an abomination, and it's a barefaced lie. I hope you have the time to study the enclosed material. There is a tremendous amount of additional information available and more being published. Americans must awaken to the reality of the monetary hoax and demand repeal of the 1913 Federal Reserve Act. Then reinstitution of a constitutional monetary system must be effected. Any assistance you can provide to assist in the exposure of the monetary hoax is appreciated. Thanks a lot. Sincerely, W.S. Now, folks, I've done many programs on the Federal Reserve and on the IRS, and I've told you what it is and what it does and how the IRS operates as a collection agency for the Federal Reserve and that neither one of them are agencies of the United States government, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what you're going to hear, for those of you who have been listening to this program since its inception in May the 4th to be exact, of 1992, you may already know all of this, but I guarantee you there's parts of it that you're going to want to hear again. You're going to hear it from WS's point of view, a CAGI member who has gone and dug it out for himself. He didn't rely upon me to tell him the truth. He went out and found the truth, and you can do the same thing. This article was printed in the Daily American Republic, Poplar Bluff, Missouri, Monday, February the 22nd, 1993, on page 4. And it's entitled, Be Our Guest. The Daily American Republic welcomes responsible viewpoints of current interest on issues affecting Poplar Bluff and surrounding communities. The DAR reserves the right to choose or reject submissions as it deems appropriate. Now, DAR in this instance means Daily American Republic and not the Daughters of the American Revolution, as some of you may erroneously believe. The article is entitled, Americans Should Know Truth About Deficit. Editor's note, W.S. taught economics before resigning in 1988. Since then, he has spent all his time researching the truth regarding the monetary hoax perpetrated on the citizens of the United States. And this is the text of the article. Listen closely, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners. Quote, it is time for the leaders of the United States government to tell the people the truth about the deficits and the federal debt. The truth must be revealed to the people and corrective measures taken to repeal what then Congressman Charles Lindbergh called the worst legislative crime of the ages. This truth is so incredible that perhaps the best way to grasp the reality of it is to review some congressional testimony. Eustace Mullins, in Secrets of the Federal Reserve, states that, quote, on September 30, 1941, before the same committee, the House Committee on Banking and Currency, Governor Eccles of the Federal Reserve was asked by Representative Patman, how did you get the money to buy those $2 billion worth of government securities in 1933? Eccles, we created it. Mr. Patman, out of what? Eccles, out of the right to issue credit money. Mr. Patman, and there is nothing behind it is there except our government's credit? Eccles. That is what our money system is. If there were no debts in our money system, there wouldn't be any money. Unquote. Mullins exclaims, this is the most incredible part of the Federal Reserve operation and one which is difficult for anyone to understand. How can any American citizen grasp the concept that there are people in this country who have the power to make an entry in a ledger that the government of the United States now owes them $1 billion and to collect the principal and interest on this phony loan? As Congressman Patman puts it, quote, the Federal Reserve banks create money out of thin air to buy government bonds from the United States Treasury, lending money into circulation at interest, by bookkeeping entries of checkbook credit to the United States Treasury. The Treasury writes up an interest-bearing bond for $1 billion. The Federal Reserve gives the Treasury a $1 billion credit for the bond and has created out of nothing a $1 billion debt which the American people are obligated to pay with interest. Unquote. That is taken from Money Facts, House Banking and Currency Committee, 1964, page number 9, and anybody out there can look it up. To continue. Congressman Louis T. McFadden, in a speech before Congress on Friday, June 10, 1932, stated this, quote, Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks. Some people think the Federal Reserve Banks are United States government institutions. They are not government institutions. They are private credit monopolies which prey upon the people of the United States for the benefit of themselves and their foreign customers. Those 12 private credit monopolies were deceitfully and disloyally foisted upon this country by bankers who came here from Europe and who repaid us for our hospitality by undermining our American institutions, unquote. Merrill Jenkins states in his book, called Money, The Greatest Hoax on Earth, quote, it is not who is perpetrating the evil that matters. What really matters is the abolishment of the evil so that it is not being perpetrated, unquote. The truth about the federal debt is clearly revealed in the previous statements. The Federal Reserve creates money out of thin air to buy government bonds from the United States Treasury. This private corporation has never actually loaned any existing funds to the government. Only the relatively insignificant portion of the debt resulting from the purchase of government bonds by individuals and organizations that do not have money-creating authority is valid. In 1980, interest paid on the imaginary federal debt was $74.9 billion, or 12.7% of the budget. In 1991, interest paid increased to $286 billion, or 21.6% of the budget. If Congress and the administration really want to reduce the deficit, simply remove interest on the imaginary federal debt from the budget. In fact, with interest removed from the federal budget, you will find that in 1987 and in every year since, a surplus exists. Edwin Vieira Jr., in Pieces of Eight, A Study in Constitutional Law, states on page 359, quote, any attempt to amend the nation's monetary system in the direction of constitutional ends, therefore, must ruthlessly expose, categorically repudiate, and absolutely extirpate the monetary usurpations and tyranny that Congress and the executive have perpetrated and the judiciary has condoned during the last half century, unquote. The solution to the problem of the deficit and many other ills of our nation is the repeal of the 1913 Federal Reserve Act and reinstitution of a constitutional monetary system. I'll bet that woke you up, didn't it? Now, if you've, as I said, if you've listened to this program since its inception, some of you already know most of this, but tonight you're hearing it from a different point of view, and you're going to hear some things that you haven't heard on this show before, because I'm going to be reading to you from some documented sources that you can go look up yourself and validate exactly what you're hearing here tonight. You see, folks, we're never going to save the Constitution, never going to save the Bill of Rights. We're never going to save this country, and we're never going to save ourselves until we stop the greatest theft that's ever been committed in the history of the world. For they are who are pulling the strings that make us all dance whenever they want us to dance. They are the active arm of the secret societies. They are the primary method of controlling the nation and the sheeple. And most of you out there are sheeple. And if it makes you angry to hear me say that, that is confirmation that it is true. For those who are not sheeple know who they are and would never be angry at the statement, because they know it's not meant for them. If it makes you angry, you are one of the sheeple, one of the people who cannot or will not use your intelligence, and thus are nothing more than puppets on the end of a string. And every time the string is pulled, you will dance, and you will dance to the tune that is played by the puppet master, and you will dance in the direction that he or she wishes you to dance. And that is fact. Now, folks, make sure that you understand the intent of this program is to wake you up, to save you, to save all of us. Hopefully, to preserve freedom for the world, for we're headed into a new world order, a totalitarian socialist government where we will all be slaves. Now, I want you to listen carefully. You've all been calling. You've been writing, you've been asking me, how can I save my assets? Well, first let me tell you, folks, that if you don't save the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, you're not going to lose your assets, but you're going to lose your ass, and I don't mean the one out there in the barn. One way that you can preserve the value of what you have today is to call Swiss America Trading right now. As you know, a fire caused this show to move from WWCR to WRNO. When my friends at Swiss America Trading heard about the fire, they went right to work. They believe in this show. They believe that the people of the world need to hear the information that is put out on this show. You see, they went right to work finding us another place to broadcast. They're the ones who got us this airtime on WRNO. Within a matter of hours, the station was found, thus making it possible for this program to continue to tell the people of the world the truth that they never hear from any other source. The people at Swiss America Trading stand behind this program, and I want you to stand behind them. But especially I want you to contact them to learn how to protect what it is that you have now. The longer you wait, the less you're going to have to protect. Because inflation destroys what you own. It takes away, it robs you. And while we're in a depression now, the ultimate end of a depression is inflation. Swiss America Trading deals in protecting their clients through non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets. You've heard me inform you about the trouble this country is in, both politically and financially. And the time to act is now. Now, not later when it's too late. Call the experts at Swiss America Trading at 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646, and have them show you how to protect yourself. Call 1-800-289-2646 and mention my name, William Cooper, for a free newsletter on protecting your future. For by protecting your future, you're keeping the future of this program alive, and I hope freedom for the world. Call today, 1-800-289-2646. Don't go away, folks. We've got to take a break. I'll be right back after this very short pause. That didn't take long. Now did it. Folks, if you've followed my broadcast for any length of time, you know I have been bringing you news of the world without sponsorship. In part, I have been leery of allowing just any corporation to buy time on my show. I'm proud to announce a new alliance. Swiss America Trading Corporation and myself are committed to preparing my listening audience for the upcoming economic trauma. For over 11 years, Swiss America has been supplying over 10,000 clients with hard assets and constant information on how best to protect their assets. For a limited time, interested listeners can receive a complimentary newsletter if you mention my name, William Cooper, and ask for the information on protecting your future. Call 1-800-289-2646 and invest the time it takes to read one of the most important publications of our times. Call 1-800-289-2646 and do it right now. Folks, what I'm going to give you now comes from collective speeches of Congressman Lewis T. McFadden as compiled from the Congressional Record. From Emissary Publications, their number is 503-824-2050. That's 503-824-2050. I'll read it one more time. Area code 503-824-2050. The name is Emissary Publications. The title is Collective Speeches of Congressman Lewis T. McFadden as compiled from the Congressional Record. Their address is 9205 Southeast Clackamas Road, number 1776, Clackamas, Oregon, 97015. Call them and ask them for a free catalog because they have an awful lot of information there that you're going to want to purchase and read, and their prices are very reasonable. Now, this is from Chapter 16, entitled The Treacherous and Disloyal Conduct of the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, and this speech was given on Friday, June 10th, 1932. Now, you can look this up in the Congressional Record. You don't have to go to Emissary Publications to get this. But in the Congressional Record, you have to go through years and years and days of text of the Congressional Record where they have compiled all the speeches into one booklet. This is what it says in here. Now listen very carefully. Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks. The Federal Reserve Board, a government board, has cheated the government of the United States and the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the national debt. The depredations and the iniquities of the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks acting together have cost this country enough money to pay the national debt several times over. This evil institution has impoverished and ruined the people of the United States, has bankrupted itself, and has practically bankrupted our government. It has done this through the defects of the law under which it operates, through the maladministration of that law by the Federal Reserve Board, and through the corrupt practices of the moneyed vultures who control it. Some people think the Federal Reserve Banks are United States government institutions. They are not government institutions. They are private credit monopolies which prey upon the people of the United States for the benefit of themselves and their foreign customers, foreign and domestic speculators and swindlers, and rich and predatory moneylenders. In that dark crew of financial pirates, there are those who would cut a man's throat to get a dollar out of his pocket. There are those who send money into states to buy votes to control our legislation. And there are those who maintain an international propaganda for the purpose of deceiving us and of wheedling us into the granting of new concessions which will permit them to cover up their past misdeeds and set again in motion their gigantic train of crime. Those 12 private credit monopolies were deceitfully and disloyally foisted upon this country by bankers who came here from Europe and who repaid us for our hospitality by undermining our American institutions. Those bankers took money out of this country to finance Japan in a war against Russia. They created a reign of terror in Russia with our money in order to help that war along. They instigated the separate peace between Germany and Russia and thus drove a wedge between the Allies in the World War. They financed Trotsky's mass meetings of discontent and rebellion in New York. They paid Trotsky's passage from New York to Russia so that he might assist in the destruction of the Russian Empire. They fomented and instigated the Russian Revolution, and they placed a large fund of American dollars at Trotsky's disposal in one of their branch banks in Sweden, so that through him, Russian homes might be thoroughly broken up and Russian children flung far and wide from their natural protectors. They have since begun the breaking up of American homes and the dispersal of American children. It has been said that President Wilson was deceived by the attentions of these bankers and by the philanthropic poses they assumed. It has been said that when he discovered the manner in which he had been misled by Colonel House, he turned against that busybody, that holy monk of the financial empire, and showed him the door. He had the grace to do that, and in my opinion, he deserves great credit for it. The next series of documentation comes from a book entitled Secrets of the Federal Reserve, The London Connection, Jekyll Island Edition by Eustace Mullins. You can also get this from Emissary Publications, 503-824-2050, 9205 Southeast Clackamas Road, number 1776, Clackamas, Oregon, 97015. Ask them for a free catalog, folks. What I'm going to read you first is from Chapter 5, The House of Rothschild. And this is paragraph 4. Thus we see that the 1910 plot to seize control of the money and credit of the people of the United States was planned by men who already controlled most of the country's resources. It seemed to John Moody practically automatic that they should continue with their operations. What John Moody did not know or did not tell his readers was that the most powerful men in the United States were themselves answerable to another power, a foreign power, and a power which had been steadfastly seeking to extend its control over the young republic of the United States since its very inception. This power was the financial power of England, centered in the London branch of the House of Rothschild. The fact was that in 1910, the United States was for all practical purposes being ruled from England, and so it is today. The 10 largest bank-holding companies in the United States are firmly in the hands of certain banking houses, all of which have branches in London. Now we skip over to page 50, paragraph 3. In 1836, President Andrew Jackson, infuriated by the tactics of the bankers who were attempting to persuade him to renew the charter of the Second Bank of the United States, said, quote, "You are a den of vipers. I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God I will rout you out. If the people only understood the rank injustice of our money and banking system, there would be a revolution before morning." And then to the bottom of the page, Henry Clews, the famous banker, in his book 28 Years in Wall Street, states that the panic of 1837 was engineered because the charter of the Second Bank of the United States had run out in 1836. Not only did President Jackson promptly withdraw government funds from the Second Bank of the United States, but he deposited these funds, $10 million, in state banks. The immediate result, Clews tells us, is that the country began to enjoy great prosperity. This sudden flow of cash caused an immediate expansion of the national economy, and the government paid off the entire national debt, leaving a surplus of $50 million in the treasury, a huge, tremendous, unbelievable fortune in those days, folks. The European financiers had the answer to this situation. Clews further states, the panic of 1837 was aggravated by the Bank of England when it in one day threw out all the paper connected with the United States, unquote. And later, one of the high water marks of the successful Rothschild Peabody Morgan business venture was the panic of 1857. It had been 20 years since the panic of 1837. Its lessons had been forgotten by hordes of eager investors who were anxious to invest the profits of a developing America. It was time to fleece them again. The stock market operates like a wave washing up on the beach. It sweeps with it many minuscule creatures who derive all of their life support from the oxygen and water of the wave. They coast along at the crest of the tide of prosperity. Suddenly the wave, having reached the high water mark on the beach, recedes, leaving all of the creatures gasping on the sand. Another wave may come in time to save them, but in all likelihood it will not come as far, and some of the sea creatures are doomed. In the same manner, waves of prosperity, fed by newly created money, through an artificial contraction of credit, recedes, leaving those it had borne high to gasp and die without hope of salvation, unquote. And folks, that is what is happening now. Now. To continue over on page 53, LaRouche tells us that on February 5, 1891, a secret association known as the Round Table Group was formed in London by Cecil Rhodes, his banker, Lord Rothschild, the Rothschild in-law, Lord Rosebery, and Lord Curzon. He states that in the United States, the Round Table was represented by the Morgan Group. Dr. Carroll Quigley refers to this group as, quote, the British American Secret Society, unquote, in Tragedy and Hope, stating that, quote, the chief backbone of this organization grew up along the already existing financial cooperation running from the Morgan Bank in New York to a group of international financiers in London led by Lazard Brothers in 1901, unquote. William Guy Carr in Pawns in the Game states that, quote, in 1899, J.P. Morgan and Drexel went to England to attend the International Bankers Convention. When they returned, J.P. Morgan had been appointed head representative of the Rothschild interests in the United States. As the result of the London conference, J.P. Morgan and Company of New York, Drexel and Company of Philadelphia, Grenfell and Company of London, and Morgan Harsey of Paris, M.M. Warburg Company of Germany and America, and the House of Rothschild were all affiliated. Apparently unaware of the Peabody connection with the Rothschilds, and the fact that the Morgans had always been affiliated with the House of Rothschild, Carr supposed that he had uncovered this relationship as of 1899, when in fact it went back to 1835. And folks, I'm going to interrupt here and interject that it goes all the way back to the Knights Templar before their destruction or supposed destruction in 1307. For the international bankers are the Knights Templars. We continue now. After World War I, the Round Table became known as the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States and the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London. The leading government officials of both England and the United States were chosen from its members. In the 1960s, as growing attention centered on the surreptitious governmental activities of the Council on Foreign Relations, subsidiary groups known as the Trilateral Commission and others representing the identical financial interests began operations, with the more important officials such as Robert Roussa being members of all three groups. According to William Guy Carr in Pawns in the Game, the initial meeting of these ex officio planners took place in Mayor Amschel Bauer Goldsmith's shop in Frankfurt in 1773. Bauer, who adopted the name of Rothschild, or Red Shield, from the red shield which he hung over his door to advertise his business, the red shield today is the official coat of arms of the city of Frankfurt, was only 30 years of age when he invited 12 other wealthy and influential men to meet him in Frankfurt. His purpose was to convince them that if they agreed to pool their resources, they could then finance and control the world revolutionary movement and use it as their manual of action to win ultimate control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world. This agreement reached Meyer, unfolded his revolutionary plan. The project would be backed by all the power that could be purchased with their pooled resources. By clever manipulation of their combined wealth, it would be possible to create such adverse economic conditions that the masses would be reduced to a state bordering on starvation by unemployment. Their paid propagandists would arouse feelings of hatred and revenge against the ruling classes by exposing all real and alleged cases of extravagance, licentious conduct, injustice, oppression, and persecution. They would also invent infamies to bring into disrepute others who might, if left alone, interfere with their overall plans. Rothschild turned to a manuscript and proceeded to read a carefully prepared plan of action. 1. He argued that law was force only in disguise. He reasoned it was logical to conclude by the laws of nature, right lies in force. 2. Political freedom is an idea, not a fact. In order to usurp political power, all that was necessary was to preach liberalism so that the electorate, for the sake of an idea, would yield some of their power and prerogatives, which the plotters could then gather into their own hands. Are you listening out there? 3. The speaker asserted that the power of gold had usurped the power of liberal rulers. He pointed out that it was immaterial to the success of his plan whether the established governments were destroyed by external or internal foes, because the victor had to, of necessity, ask the aid of capital, which is entirely in our hands. 4. He argued that the use of any and all means to reach their final goal was justified on the grounds that the ruler who governed by the moral code was not a skilled politician, because he left himself vulnerable and in an unstable position. 5. He asserted that, quote, our right lies in force. The word right is an abstract thought and proves nothing. I find a new right to attack by the right of the strong, to reconstruct all existing institutions and to become the sovereign lord of all those who left us the rights to their powers by laying them down to us in their liberalism. Unquote. 6. The power of our resources must remain invisible until the very moment when it has gained such strength that no cunning or force can undermine it. He went on to outline 25 points. Number 8 dealt with the use of alcoholic liquors, drugs, moral corruption, and all vice to systematically corrupt youth of all nations. 9. They had the right to seize property by any means and without hesitation, if by doing so they secured submission and sovereignty. And that's happening now all over this country. 10. We were the first to put the slogans liberty, equality, and fraternity into the mouths of the masses, which set up a new aristocracy. The qualification for this aristocracy is wealth, which is dependent on us. 11. Wars should be directed so that the nations engaged on both sides should be further in our debt. 12. Candidates for public office should be servile and obedient to our commands so that they may be readily used. 13. Propaganda, their combined wealth, would control all outlets of public information. And that is true in the United States today. 5 corporations own all. the print, television, and radio media in this country, except for a very, very small minority of independent owners. 14. Panics and financial depressions would ultimately result in world government, a new order of one world government, unquote. Someone once said that the wealth of Rothschild consists of the bankruptcy of nations. The great Soviet encyclopedia states, quote, the clearest example of a personal link-up international directorates on a Western European scale is the Rothschild family. Now, folks, those points that are credited to Amschel Rothschild were not of his doing at all, for they come from what are known as the protocols of the wise men of Zion. And they have been used to persecute the Jewish people throughout the ages. And I'm going to tell you right now that the Jewish people did not write the protocols of the wise men of Zion. They were written by the Illuminati. Those who are illumined, the members of the secret societies who pit us all against each other, while they are maneuvering in the background in the shadows to enslave us all. To enslave us all. You had better be listening to me, and you had better understand what I am saying. For failure to do so will just result in the destruction of this country and of freedom for the world. And you will, in fact, become a slave in the New World Order. And if you are so stupid as to allow that to happen, then certainly you will deserve that fate. But there are many of us who do not deserve that fate, and we need you to help us prevent it. And in doing so, you will do yourself a favor. But don't take my word for it, folks. Look it up. Find it for yourself. Senator Robert L. Owen, testifying before the House Committee on Banking and Currency in 1938, said this, quote, the powerful money interests got control of the Federal Reserve Board through Mr. Paul Warburg, Mr. Albert Strauss, and Mr. Adolf C. Miller, and they were able to have their secret meeting of May 18, 1920, and bring about a contraction of credit so violent it threw 5 million people out of employment. In 1920, that Reserve Board deliberately caused the panic of 1921. The same people, unrestrained in the stock market, expanding credit to a great excess between 1926 and 1929, raised the price of stocks to a fantastic point where they could not possibly earn dividends, and when the people realized this, they tried to get out, resulting in the crash of October 24, 1929. Governor W.P.G. Harding of the Federal Reserve Board testified in 1921 that, quote, the Federal Reserve Bank is an institution owned by the stockholding member banks. The government has not a dollar's worth of stock in it, unquote. Are you listening? Do you care? At the House Banking and Currency Committee hearings on June 6, 1960, Congressman Wright Patman, chairman, questioned Carl E. Allen, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Patman, now, Mr. Allen, when the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee buys a million-dollar bond, you create the money on the credit of the nation to pay for that bond, don't you? Allen, that is correct. Patman, and the credit of the nation is represented by Federal Reserve notes in that case, isn't it? If the banks want the actual money, you give Federal Reserve notes in payment, don't you? Allen, that could be done, but nobody wants the Federal Reserve notes. Patman, nobody wants them because the banks would rather have the credit as reserves. This is the most incredible part of the Federal Reserve operation and one which is difficult for anyone to understand. How can any American citizen grasp the concept that there are people in this country who have the power to make an entry in a ledger that the government of the United States now owes them $1 billion and to collect the principal and interest on this non-existent phony loan? But we've been doing it for years, haven't we? As Congressman Patman puts it, quote, The dollar represents a $1 debt to the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve banks create money out of thin air to buy government bonds from the United States Treasury, lending money into circulation at interest by bookkeeping entries of checkbook credit to the United States Treasury. The Treasury writes up an interest-bearing bond for $1 billion. The Federal Reserve gives the Treasury a $1 billion credit for the bond and has created out of nothing a $1 billion debt which the American people are obligated to pay with interest. And you wonder what's wrong with this country. What's happening to the economy? Wake up, sheeple. Where does the Federal Reserve System get the money with which to create bank reserves? The answer, it doesn't get the money, it merely creates it. When the Federal Reserve writes a check, it is creating money. The Federal Reserve is a total money-making machine. It can issue money or checks. One of the most important factors to remember in this connection is that the supply of money affects the general level of prices, the cost of living index, and money supply are parallel. The Federal Reserve's major function is to determine the money supply. It has the power to increase or decrease the money supply at any rate it chooses and destroy millions of people with the swipe of a pen. On September 30th, 1941, before the same committee, Governor Eccles was asked by Representative Patman, "How did you get the money to buy those $2 billion worth of government securities in 1933? Eccles, "We created it." Mr. Patman, "Out of what?" Eccles, "Out of the right to issue credit money." Mr. Patman, "And there is nothing behind it, is there, except our government's credit?" Eccles, "That is what our money system is. If there were no debts in our money system, there wouldn't be any money." And now, let me put the nail in the coffin. I'm going to read you one paragraph from the Federal Reserve System, Its Purposes and Functions, printed by the United States of America, Washington, in 1939, by the United States Government Printing Office. And on the front of this, it has the seal of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. And on page 85, I quote, "Federal Reserve Bank credit, therefore, as already stated, does not consist of funds that the reserve authorities get somewhere in order to lend, but constitutes funds that they are empowered to create," unquote. End of subject. Nail in the coffin. And if you don't understand what's happening to this country now, nobody can help you ever. Wake up, sheeple. The answer is in front of our nose. Now, if you want to save your ass and your assets, help us save the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We've got to get rid of the Federal Reserve and the IRS. If you want to save your assets, call Swiss America Trading. As you know, folks, a fire caused us to move. And when my friends at Swiss America Trading heard about the fire, they went right to work, finding us another place to broadcast right here on this station at this time. Within a matter of hours, they found this station, thus making it possible for this program to continue to get the truth out to the rest of the world. The people at Swiss America Trading stand behind this program, and I want you to stand behind them. Swiss America Trading deals in protecting their clients through non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets. You've heard me inform you about the trouble this country is in, both politically and financially. The time to act is now. Call the experts at Swiss America Trading at 1-800-289-2646 and have them show you how to protect yourself. Call 1-800-289-2646 and mention my name, William Cooper, for a free newsletter on protecting your future. By protecting your future, you're keeping the future of this program alive and freedom for the world. 1-800-289-2646. Good night. And God bless you all.